scores! Gilmore scores! The ball three left.
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguilar. Aguilar left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguilar. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
It is a Friday, December 6th. Let's get this hour underway alongside Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. Steinberg along with you on Flames Talk. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. This Christmas, give the gift of security with smart locks and safes. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. What's up, Wes? Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you, buddy.
It's Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Amazon.
I got to tell you, I'm fired right up today.
Are you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's Friday. It's Friday afternoon. Got enough rum and eggnog at home to get me through an Eric Francis hour. Let's go.
What a beating. You know, I will say, Friday morning at practice, there was enough edge to go around for an entire year, and I was here for it.
Yeah, a little spice for your rum and eggnog.
And honestly, like, it was from everyone. Like, we had Wes and Wilsey and Danny, all, and then the edge was all directed in one direction, and rightfully so. But it was just it was very edgy.
Yeah.
And I thought I thought it was an encouraging and heartening day at practice from that perspective.
I concur.
So I've got a little juice for Flames Talk on this Friday as well. Another night where the Flames just could not score that fourth goal.
Yeah, and stop me if you've heard this one before.
Oof, if you've been listening for the last 2 months, you've heard that one before. By the way, text line's open, 960-960. Feel free to jump in if you're listening live on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. A fourth goal Thursday versus St. Louis, they probably win that game in regulation. But it's been such a struggle to hit that elusive number of four goals. They are now 24 straight games without scoring three or more goals. It is a hard number to wrap your head around in this day and age of the NHL to go more than a quarter of a season, 24 games consecutively without scoring three or more goals. I know you wrote about this on Friday. You wrote about the whole idea, like some of the individual paces that players are on. No players on pace for more than 50 points as we sit here on December 6th. Is that an accurate statement?
That is... Not only accurate, it's unbelievable. We are here now, and I think, you know, one of the reasons I wrote about this today is 27 games in essentially represents, okay, you're one third of the way through the season. We're not talking about a small sample size. And the Calgary Flames do not have a single player on pace for 50 points. Now, if you go back and, you know, for those interested, I crunched the numbers on all the regular players, like every lineup regular, how many points they're on pace for, starting with the guys at the top in Huberdeau, Kadri, and Uyghur, who are on pace for 48.6. But, you know, if you flip through the franchise record books, the Flames have never had a season where they didn't have at least one player get to 50 points. I mean, it's not like we're not talking a pie in the sky benchmark, right?
No.
A couple guys in the NHL might be there by Christmas. The Calgary Flames at this point do not have a single guy on track for 50, and that's scary.
So you take into account the fact they haven't scored three or more in 24 straight games. Somebody texted in, did they not score three last night? No, please note the wording, three or more. They have not scored more than three.
Yeah.
Both are accurate. But perhaps even more clear, they have not scored more than three in 24 consecutive games.
Almost half the league is averaging more than three a game.
Yeah. Like, it's hard to wrap your head around that it's gone that long of them not scoring more than three goals in a game. I guess that is more clear. More than three is a number that wins you a lot of games. Now, you asked Ryan Huska about this after practice, the head coach, and I thought that, like, he knows that they're having trouble scoring.
Yep.
He knows that it's been the 24 straight games. He knows that their margin for error is super, super slim right now. This was head coach Ryan Huska when you asked him about nobody on pace for more than 50 points this season.
Let's put it this way. If you score 3 goals a night, you should win a game. And I feel like we're doing that. And I do feel like over time, when we play the right way and play our game, we're going to score more than 3 goals. You don't have to do it by opening yourself up or taking unnecessary chances that hurt us at the other end, where with the 3 goals on the board, 4, you should be winning a game. So there's such a fine line when it comes to that. I really like the scoring by committee because everybody's involved and everybody's a threat. And I do feel like our scoring is going to come. I really do. I think it's just a matter of time because our power play is now starting to click. Our offensive guys are feeling a little bit better about what they're doing with the puck now. And I feel like it's a matter of time before we start seeing some games where we're putting more than 3 on the board.
So where are we on this team's lack of scoring? They have gone 24 straight games. We're approaching about 2 months now where they haven't scored more than 3 goals in a game. They are sitting 26th overall in goals per game, and that is with a red-hot power play. The 5-on-5 numbers are really alarming. At 5-on-5, they are 30th when it comes to scoring. This is a alarming trend. Where are we on why it's here? And where are we on their ability to potentially improve it?
Well, we knew that you were going to be talking throughout this season with the Calgary Flames about a scoring by committee approach. And so, you know, the fact that there's not a kind of clear-cut go-to guy, I suppose, is predictable. But just not having anybody sort of, like, put it this way, okay, if you start scrolling through the NHL's scoring leaders, do you know how many guys you have to get past to find a Flame?
It's in the triple digits.
Jonathan Huberdeau, Nazem Kadri, and Mackenzie Weegar, as I said earlier, tied for the team lead with 16 points. That is tied for 120th in the NHL. Like, you'll get carpal tunnel trying to find a Flame on the individual scoring leaders right now. And so I think there's two ways to look at it. The one way to look at it is, you know, holy jumping, how are they off to the start they are? Like, how do you have an above 500 record when you can't score?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can look at it and say, okay, well, you know, that's really impressive to be off to the start that you are with those scoring struggles. 13-9-5, do I have that right?
13-9-5, yep.
Yeah. So 13-9-5 with the scoring struggles, without a top 100 scorer, without a guy on pace for over 50. And, you know, I think you can look at it and say, okay, well, the offense has to, there's got to be an uptick, doesn't there? You can't kind of wallow at this rate for much longer. And then, you know, the negative way to look at it is obviously, well, when this team needs a big goal, who's going to get it? Who's going to be the guy who steps up? And you know, I struggled. I don't know if struggled is the right way to put it, but, you know, in writing what I did today, which is just that, hey, you know, the team is on pace for the first time in franchise history to not have a 50-point guy. How big of a concern is this? You know, I think part of it puts a microscope on the Kadris and the Huberdeaus, the guys whose contracts and past production
resumes
would suggest that they should be, that they should be on pace for more than 50. But I think you're sort of missing the boat if those are the only guys you're blaming, right? You know, Yegor Sharangovich is on pace, and I realize there was some injury issue early, missed some games. I think probably came back a little sooner than he should have. But Yegor Sharangovich is on pace for 30 points this season. He has not been nearly the offensive factor he was a year ago. Connor Zary's numbers don't match the, like, his his numbers in terms of just the basic goals and assists don't match, I think, what he's generating. And that's a guy who needs to convert on more of his chances. Andre Kuzmenko needs to do, we've been through this one a lot this week, he needs to do something. We need to see a response when he gets back in the lineup. And so, you know, it's not just those guys at the top that I think you're pointing the finger at, but you can look at it and say, okay, well, yeah, maybe it's great to be 13-9-5 without anyone scoring at maybe the clip you anticipate. But when you do need a big goal, where is it coming from?
Well, and again, like, I know there was controversy on the overtime winner, but you get to that elusive four-goal mark and you break that streak of not scoring three or more on Thursday night, you win a game in regulation. And it's not even
39 shots.
Like 39 shots, lots of opportunities. I mean, and I'm not trying to take anything away from Team Canada goaltender Jordan Binnington, who had a strong night, although I did take a little bit of glee and pleasure in him kind of, you know, he kind of hurt his team, you know, the trapezoid penalty, and then, you know, maybe not the greatest. Probably could have gotten
stuff in that game last night, wasn't there? Trapezoid penalty.
When was the last time you saw a trapezoid penalty?
You know,
and it was so obvious.
Piker asked me that question actually last night, and I swore at him because I was on deadline. I don't know the answer. But
did you actually swear at him?
Yeah. I'm sorry, Piker. But not like there was that weird moment in the neutral zone.
I can just
everyone knows.
Put myself in like right there. I can just put myself as
for
like
those
a
listening who
fly on that wall.
For those listening who've never been treated to the Ed Whalen Media Lounge on deadline, Gilbertson's a little more ornery than he likes to be.
I just know it came from Pike.
He stuck his chin right
such
in there.
Innocent wonder.
When was the last time you saw a trapezoid penalty?
Shut the bleep up, Pike! My deadline!
Actually a fairly realistic reenactment of how it went down.
I love you both so much that, like, it just... anywho. To... There was a lot of strange stuff that happened on Thursday night. To Ryan Huska's point, a text comes in, says, sounds like the coach is trying to sell himself on the lack of scoring and sell himself that it's going to turn. Let me present to you a silver lining, or let me present to you the other side that suggests that maybe they could improve this. Look, I want to be very clear. The Flames are 26th overall in overall scoring per game. Their 5-on-5 scoring rate is 30th of 32 teams. I don't think this team was ever destined to be, as you said off the top, we came into this season and one of the number one things that we would have pointed to as a potential issue or a potential hole would have been their lack of scoring. So I don't think anybody was going to confuse this group as an offensive juggernaut coming into the season. This was never a high-powered offensive team. However, I do think 30th overall in 5-on-5 scoring is below where they should be. I do think there is improvement that can be found, and this is maybe some evidence, some positive evidence, some silver lining evidence that it could happen. They are at 5-on-5, 14th overall in slot opportunities per 60 minutes at 5-on-5. That's at Natural Stat Trick, so they are 14th, top half of the NHL in terms of what they're generating. And I know the Flames have their own metrics. They count scoring chances slightly different than the Natural Stat Trick does and other stats do. But a Natural Stat Trick, which is one that is generally consistent in how they track high dangers, their slot opportunities are 14th overall at 5-on-5. So there is potential for this team to see some improvement in their 5-on-5 scoring because they do have the 31st overall 5-on-5 shooting percentage. And regardless of what your roster is, that's below where it should be.
Sure.
Any NHL team should be higher than 6.35% at 5-on-5. So you never know when these things start to improve. That is a statistical anomaly, but it's also a statistical thing. Like, you always progress to the mean or regress to the mean generally. but you never know when it happens. There's no like science as to, well, it's going to start turning now, or you can only you can only go 30 games like this, and then it's a, you never know. But generally, they should start to be able to score a little bit more on 5-on-5 if they continue to generate chances at the top half of the league like they are. Again, they don't have the finishing power that other teams do. I think we all understand that. But Sharon Govich can finish at a higher rate. We know that. I think Coronado and Zeri will start to finish at a higher rate as they become more and more comfortable being full-time NHLers. So I think that there is potential light at the end of the tunnel. The question is, Wes, how bright is that light, right? Like, they're 30th in 5-on-5 scoring. Is there potential 22nd, or is there potential 14th? And so what type of improvement do they have in them?
Yeah.
I do believe there is a little bit more than what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, I think so. And some of that, and this is such a cliche look at it, but some of that's chemistry too. Like Ryan Huska continues to fiddle with his forward lines, and the reason he continues to fiddle with them is I don't think he's found the trios that he thinks are the right click. I shouldn't say I don't think he has.
We know that.
We know that. And so, that's something that can certainly impact it. Obviously, you're talking about 5-on-5, but one of the things the coach mentioned is
power play's been rolling.
Yeah, and with that, you get guys feeling better about their game offensively, right? When Matt Coronado rips that shot on the power play, you see it the next few shifts. Like you see the swagger and the willingness to shoot it a little bit more. And you know, I'm probably clouding the issue by mentioning Coronado because he's the one guy whose offensive pace you're not upset about among the forwards. Like you're certainly pretty happy with where he is, but you know, the idea being that, you know, the power play is sort of the rising tide that can lift them all up a little bit. And so potentially we start to see that again. Like if we, and I mentioned this sort of hypothetical, I think quite a bit, it feels like I have at least quite a bit this season. If you said to me, okay, the Calgary Flames are packing their suitcases for game number 28 in Dallas, their leading scorer has 16 points. They haven't scored more than 3 goals in a game since game 3 of now 27. If you said, take those, throw them in your brain calculator and tell me what their record is, I am not saying 13-9-5.
Mm-hmm.
So in a lot of ways, credit to them for enjoying a solid start despite the scoring struggles. But if you don't see an uptick in offense, when do those scoring struggles really start to bite you?
And I think that we have seen that in the past 6 games. Okay, they blank Columbus on Tuesday, but they don't score a 4th goal on Thursday. And that, whether you agree with the overtime goal or not,
yeah,
that cost them a point.
Right.
They didn't score much at all, especially meaningful goals. I think they scored 5 meaningful goals on the road on that 4-game road trip. They lost all 4 games. So I think you're starting to see it catch up. And it's not like they were giving up a boatload of chances on that road trip either. It's not like they gave up a ton of chances against St. Louis on Thursday. They're still, like, team defense has been generally strong. They're in the top half in terms of what they limit on quality chances. Their goaltending is top 10. But that can only take you so far if you're going to have like bottom
right.
NHL scoring numbers. And so that uptick in offense doesn't need to get them into the top third of the league for them to keep their record at or above where it is, but it does need to improve because eventually if you're a right near the bottom of the NHL scoring team, it's going to become harder and harder to win games. And so team defense and goaltending has been strong. I believe it will continue to be strong. But if you're handicapped by something else so detrimentally like they are right now,
yeah,
then it's going to start reflecting in the record sooner rather than later. And I think we've seen that a little bit even in recent games.
Well, and even, you know, if you look now in their past 6 games, they have 4 points, right? The win over the Blue Jackets at home and then overtime losses at home to St. Louis and on the road in Detroit. And so if you look at those two loser points, because of your offensive struggles, like you had to really scratch and claw to get 1 point out of those games. Yeah, the Calgary Flames carried the play last night. They were the better of the two teams, but if Jordan Binnington doesn't take that trapezoid penalty, are we sitting here talking about a 3-2 loss? Yeah. because you couldn't get that crucial goal at 5-on-5? I don't know, right? Obviously, you know, good on them to take advantage of what became a 4-on-4 scenario after the Binnington penalty and tie it up. But same thing going back to Detroit. It was nails on the chalkboard just to get 1 point out of that, right? Was that 58th minute or something that they tied that game?
Yep.
And so
on the power play too.
Right. And so because you're just not producing at 5-on-5, just to squeeze anything out of what are reasonably good games is like, it's a real struggle. And so when the margins are as razor thin as we know they're going to be for this Flames team, that really, like, that lack of 5-on-5 offense, and as you said, we're not expecting them to suddenly be a top 10 team in that category, but if you can't get somewhere closer to at least kind of the middle, it's going to bite you.
Let's read some texts at 960-960. Let's start with Jeff in Lethbridge, or as he's now coined himself, Jeff Bridge. I don't mind that, actually. Jeff Bridge, I like that. If they play 55 more games like the one they played last night, the Flames will make the playoffs, which is far above preseason expectations. This team's a pleasant surprise, even though they're routinely scoring less than 4 per game. They're fun to watch, and they never quit. This reads... 960-960. Stafford. Just curious, Pat, who are the other bottom scoring 5-on-5 teams in the standings? So the Flames are 30th at 5-on-5 goals for.
Yeah.
Detroit and Nashville are the two below them. Detroit has had very similar issues scoring as Calgary has and have remained competitive-ish. And Nashville is an abject disaster this year based on what they were trying to do in the offseason.
Is Boston still hanging around near the bottom as well?
Wes, give me 2 seconds and I'll answer that.
Yeah, you know I can't look up these numbers on my own. I have to text you and say, Pat, I'm trying to find this. I don't know where it is.
So the bottom teams right now in the league in this conversation are 32nd Nashville, 31st Detroit, 30th Calgary, 29th Chicago, 28th Anaheim, 27th the Islanders, 26th St. Louis, and 25th overall, Boston.
And most of those teams are hanging out in the basement suite of the NHL standings.
The first team that you get to that you would say at 5-on-5 scoring is a contender, you know, league-wide perception as a contender would be Edmonton at 20th.
Okay.
So, you know, that gives you a that gives you an idea. What else we got here at 960-960 on the text line? This from Tom, who says, I agree with all of your points, but think we're focusing too much on what's happening now and not in the future of this team, especially the young players that'll form the core group moving forwards. They can learn how to play defense and the whole team. I don't know what that's trying to say, but I think it's trying to say they can be a can. Everybody can contribute scoring every game. Think of where they'll be in 2 or 3 years when those young players are starting to produce a bit more as they learn the NHL and with a potential free agent signing or prospect that could turn into an elite goal scorer. Sometimes reading voice to text is a difficult thing to do, so I did my best on that one.
Well, and was it Tom?
Yep.
You know, certainly if you ask around the locker room or, you know, if you replay Ryan Huska's clip from today, like part of the point is, okay, there is a sacrifice offensively that comes with the type of buy-in that the Flames are demanding for the style that they want to play, right? They're not a team that's willing to take risks to try to create offense. And part of that is knowing they don't have a bunch of game breakers on their bench. More often than not, those risks would probably be coming back to haunt you. And so that's just not the way they're going to play, right? We're not going to see, as Jonathan Huberdeau said to me, we're not going to see a whole lot of 7-5 games involving the Calgary Flames. Mm-hmm. And so there is some trade-off there. And maybe to Tom's point, you know, having the youngsters come up in that sort of environment can ultimately be a good thing. But as you look at the here and now, if this team off to a surprise start is going to hang around in that playoff picture, they're going to have to start to put some pucks in the net at 5-on-5.
Dalen Drumheller says they can still score by committee. They just need everybody to take one extra little step. If all the players on pace for just under 50 were on pace for just under 60, they'd be in good shape. My only rebuttal to that is, how realistic is that to just get this, you know, team-wide uptick individually? And the other thing that we haven't brought up that I do think is part of this, and this is not a negative, because I think there is one brand of hockey the Flames need to play, and that's the brand of hockey that is going to give them the most success and keep them closest to the playoff picture or remain in the playoff picture throughout the entire year. And that is the very defensively sound, grinding brand of hockey that they're playing right now. And I do think that that limits offense, especially when you're asking for a full-on buy-in. I do think it limits a little bit of your offense, which is maybe why your stark individual point projections are across the board as low as they are. I mean, Nazem Kadri had more than 70 points last year, and he's underneath that significantly. You know, we're talking about Jonathan Huberdeau for a third consecutive year being on pace for lower than the year before. Yegor Sharangovich, you mentioned. Other names that were Blake Coleman that were big-time contributors offensively last year. I don't think it is a coincidence that all mm-hmm. these guys say, oh, well, these guys are all snake-bitten, or all these guys don't know how to score anymore. I do think there is a systematic thing that is playing into this, and I don't look at that as a negative, because I do think that is the best path for success for this team.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, if you go back to last fall, you know, this was a team that couldn't limit chances coming the other direction. They've really buckled down on that part, but there has been a trade-off in terms of what they're creating offensively, and it puts a lot of pressure on whoever in the committee is getting the chances to take advantage of them. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a team, because of how they have to play, if you get 39 shots, you have to capitalize and win that game. You have to, if you're going to play with the margins that the Flames are playing with, when you are by far the better team, you have to figure out a way to get enough offense to win that game.
Yeah. Yep. One more text from Dana. I have no issue with the lack of personal production thus far. The old story, it's a results business. They're getting wins, and that's all that matters. Lack of production, as I see it, is a function of the focus on defensive commitment, and that's more important. I disagree. Team defense wins games and championships. As the season goes along, things will tighten up, and this defensive mindset will be important. The power play has to continue to be better, as it has been, and this can and will account for the current scoring deficit and continue to change games in Calgary's favor. The only thing I would say is that eventually, I do think being a bottom team for scoring, I do think eventually that is going to catch up to any team, yeah, regardless of how strong their team defense and goaltending is. And Dana, I agree. Team defense and goaltending is huge, especially when games are tighter in the playoffs. But you still have to score, and you still have to be able to score when it matters the most and get that extra goal. And that has been a significant issue. And 13-9-5, that's more losses than wins. And I know it's above 500 NHL-wise, and I will fight tooth and nail with anybody who says the Flames are below 500, because they're not. They are above 500. NHL 500 is what it is now. It's points versus games played. They've got more points than they have games played, but they've also lost overall more games. That means that there have been 14 occasions where they haven't been able to find that next goal. And so that also can start to become an issue in February and March when games are tighter, or April and May.
Because we can't say that the games are going to get tighter in February and March and onwards, and think that the Flames, as the games tighten up, will continue to generate at their current, like, we can't imagine it's going to get harder for every team other than the Flames to score. It's going to get harder for them to score as the games tighten up as well. And so if you're not scoring now, it doesn't bode very well for those times.
Yep.
I know we got to get to break, but let's touch on this other topic you have really quick, because I do want to shine a bit of light on it.
Jonathan Huberdeau played 25:03 against St. Louis, most regular season ice time of his NHL career, beating his prior high by 7 seconds. He played 24:57 almost 4 years ago to the date. It was December 5th against the Blues. It was December 4th, 2021, when he played just under 25 minutes, his prior career high, also against St. Louis, when he was a member of the Florida Panthers. Played 25:03. The night that he had set his prior career high was a full 65-minute game. This was 62:25. The long and short of it is he played an absolute bleep load on Thursday night against St. Louis.
And played really well. I got to tell you, I've been thinking about something recently, and a combination of your tweet about Jonathan Huberdeau playing a career high last night and Ryan Huska's very pointed criticism last night of his penalty kill sort of got me focused a little bit more on this. I'd love to see Jonathan Huberdeau used a little bit more in shorthanded situations. He was playing more penalty kill at the start of the season, and he was talking a lot about how involved it was helping him stay, how he thought that it was basically bringing out the best of him. And I got to tell you, as they look for ways to generate more offense and as they look for ways to fix their penalty kill, I'd love to see Huberdeau mixed in a little bit more while shorthanded, because I do think it can help you in two ways.
Yeah.
Why not? Yeah. Right? Like what do you have to lose on a penalty kill now that is clipping along at 71.1%, want to say?
Yep.
And if Jonathan Huberdeau, who told me this morning, the more he plays, you know, the better he feels in a game, and it looked that way. You can't play him 25 minutes a night, but played really well last night against the St. Louis Blues.
I thought he was one of their best players, if not their best guy.
And so if an extra shift or two on a penalty kill can help him offensively, and if it can maybe help shore up your PK a little bit, I think it's worth a try.
Yeah. Penalty kill, I mean, what do you have to lose on the penalty kill at this point?
Nothing.
Basically allowed two goals against St. Louis, because one of them came seconds after with the Pospisil penalty, and one of them was a power play goal.
Can't take that penalty, but...
No, you sure can't. He's Wes, I'm Pat. This is Flames Talk. We're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time now for a Friday edition of our Daily Flames Roundtable. It's brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport. Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson, and now the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. Boys, now two games in the NHL lineup this season for Jacob Pelche and Walker Dewar. They were called up prior to Tuesday's win over Columbus. They also played Thursday versus St. Louis. What are our thoughts on what we've seen from Jacob and Walker in the two games, and what are our thoughts on those two continuing to be in the lineup and with the group going forward here?
Overall, I would say so far so good. Now, I did think that Walker Dewar was a little bit more impactful than Jacob Pelche in the first game that they played in, but I thought both guys certainly had an impact in last night's game. Again, they're playing on different lines. Pelche is on the fourth line, Dewar's on the third line, and playing in different roles, and Dewar's playing more minutes than Pelche, but it was so good to see Jacob Pelche score his first NHL goal of the season. Great celly that followed that one, and you could tell his teammates were super pumped up for him. But Walker Dewar, I thought, played really effectively in his role. And basically, he's been told by Ryan Huska and the coaching staff to use his size, use his speed, get in there on the forecheck. And I thought he did a really good job of that in that game. So I think they've both been good. And the Flames, who looked like they lacked energy during that four-game road trip when they went 0-3-1, I thought could have used a shot in the arm. And I was interviewing Jacob Pelche yesterday, and I said that to him at the end of the conversation. And he's like, I'm here. The energy's here. And I'm like, yeah, it sure is. But he brings energy to the dressing room and to the bench and to the ice. So that's good to see. And I think Dewar's done exactly what the coaches have asked him to do, threw some big hits, created some scoring chances last night. And again, so far, so good for those two young guys.
Yeah, I rolled my eyes a little bit, if that's the right way to put it, when I first saw the lines after the call-ups. Like, I didn't understand, I'll be the first to admit, why Walker Dewar was the guy being placed in the third line role when Jacob Pelche probably seemed like a better fit. But, you know, proving for the millionth time that he knows way more about hockey than I ever will, I think, you know, Ryan Huska so far seems to have found a nice fit there. Like, Walker Dewar has been a real pleasant surprise for me in the past couple games. And I know he talked about just getting back to the game that helped him, you know, earn an NHL opportunity in the first place, that a game that many thought was going to make him a full-time NHLer before he tapered off. It was interesting. Ryan Huska was talking this morning about, you know, some of their analytics and basically showing last night that Walker Dewar's forechecking directly led to three scoring chances.
Mm-hmm. And that was really interesting too.
Yeah, and how that's really rare that you would have a player get credit for essentially forcing three scoring chances on the forecheck in one night. And so that part of it, the way Walker Dewar has utilized his speed and thrown his weight around, and then what that has sort of opened up for his line mates, I think has been really impressive so far. And then, I mean, I just don't know that there was anyone in the Saddle Dome who wasn't thrilled for Jacob Pelche to put a puck in the back of the net last night. And, you know, we're talking about a guy who has been pretty honest about the confidence shot or shatter that the waiver process was. You know, I had chatted with him this morning and he said, you know, it sounds so kind of lame because you always hear look yourself in the mirror. But he said, I had an actual moment when I passed through waivers. I was, you know, getting ready to have a shower and I looked myself in the mirror, and I can't repeat all the words he said because there was a little bit of swearing involved. But he basically said, like, now is the time. And, you know, Jacob Pelche said this morning, I haven't proven yet that I'm an everyday NHLer, but, you know, a few more games like last night, that sort of consistent speed, that consistent spark, and then, you know, generating and taking advantage of some opportunities. If he can show that on a consistent basis, he's going to be a lot closer to accomplishing that goal.
So a few things. First of all, on the Pelche front, I think it's been positive. It was great to see him score. I know I was talking to a couple people with the Flames. They quite liked what they saw from him. I think there is more to prove and a little more on the line for Jacob Pelche than perhaps with Walker. And that's not a knock on Dewar at all, but I think we've got a pretty good idea as to what Walker Dewar is in the NHL, a pretty good idea of where he slots if he's a full-time NHLer. What we don't know, what Jacob Pelche doesn't know, what the Flames don't know, is where Jacob's role is. And I do think there is some value in finding out whether or not he is a fourth-line guy, or more accurately, whether or not he can play a fourth-line role in the NHL. And so far in these two games with Lomberg and Rooney, I think he's done just fine. I think he's generally been effective in both the games he's played. I thought he took a step forward from game one to game two against St. Louis. I thought the fourth line barely saw the ice in the third period, which is what happens in a close game. But in the first 40 minutes of play, I thought Pelche was creating energy. I thought he was winning battles on the boards. He won a battle against Perunovic in front of the net to score the goal. He set up a couple of opportunities even when he was out there. Wilsey, I know you made mention even of this on play-by-play. I said it to myself while it happened, and then like 2 seconds later, you said the same thing. I heard you on the broadcast. He almost set up his dad for a good opportunity when he was on the ice with Jonathan Huberdeau there. I thought Pelche actually was quite effective. I know Ryan Huska made mention of the one mistake he made post-game on Thursday, but generally I thought Pelche impacted the game positively. He had a ton of attempts for his very little ice time, and I thought did a lot with his limited ice time. So for a guy that I think could very well be on his last recall with the Flames if it doesn't work out, I think so far the two games have been encouraging. He scored a goal. He's brought that energy. He's brought the Jacob Pelche smile to the bench, to the ice. You can see that. Obviously, he scores the goal, the big celebration, all of that. Like, that's good. Like, that's the type of energy this guy needs to bring. Now his challenge is do it in game 3, do it in game 6, do it in game 10, so on and so forth. But I think it's been an encouraging first two games for Pelche with a lot on the line. And so just keep it going for him. For Walker, just want to say this because I'm with you. Same thing. I was like, putting Walker Dewar on that line? Not Pelt? Okay.
Me too.
But look at these numbers for that line against St. Louis. Zeri, Dewar, and Coleman on the ice for 17 shot attempts, 4 against on Thursday night against St. Louis. That's 81% offensive zone possession. Out there for 4 high danger chances, 4-1 against. Like, they were a really impactful line, and they worked well together. I thought Coleman had his best game in ages. Zeri looked dangerous, and Dewar was playing with speed. You factor that in on top of the way he played against Columbus, where he laid that big hit on Werenski. We saw the forecheck on display with him as well. I don't know what the Flames are going to do in a couple of nights against Dallas on the road. I don't know if they're going to keep the same forward lines or bring Kuzmenko back in. But right now, Pelche, I think, has done his job as asked, and Dewar's done his job as asked. And I think that's a real positive thing for Pelche, who's really got a lot on the line, and for Dewar, who's trying to kind of reclaim a spot we thought he had 2 seasons ago. Remember, Wilsey, 2 years ago, we were talking about how Walker Dewar had kind of solidified his spot as an everyday right-wing guy on the fourth line, and then kind of took some significant steps back and played himself out of that role last year. So he's trying to reclaim that, and I think through 2 games has done a nice job of it too.
Well, 2 years ago, I thought Walker Dewar looked like a guy who was trying to prove to everybody that he was an NHL player, and he did that, and he got the contract to, I guess, proved to himself that he was an NHLer. And then last season, he looked like a different guy. He looked like a guy who had made it and who felt like he didn't have to prove that to anybody anymore. And he just looked like a guy who was playing with a 3-goal lead and took his foot off the gas. I guess that's the best way I can put it. But the Walker Dewar I've seen in the first couple of games with the Flames this season looks a lot more like the guy we saw 2 years ago. And I would say a guy who's developed from where he was 2 years ago than the guy who just really didn't move the needle for me last season. So that's why he spent most of the year with the Wranglers. But he's been really good, and he's used his size and he's used his speed, and he's banged and crashed. And I think he's played how the Flames want Martin Pospisil, easy for me to say, to play more consistently moving forward as well. Kind of that same type of role, play north-south, get in there and bang and crash on the forecheck, and that's what we need from you. And if you do that, the goals and the points will probably come. As for Jacob Pelche, he's a little bit more of an enigma for me at the NHL level because, he goes from being a top six guy in the AHL to a bottom six guy in the NHL. I don't think he's probably ever going to be a big-time point producer in the NHL, but I'm not convinced that he can't be a checker who scores. Not a lot, but chips in offensively. So I think for Jacob Pelche, his identity is a lot less clear for me at the NHL level than Walker Dewar's is. Maybe the Flames see it differently, but for me, I think I know who Dewar is. A third or a fourth line guy that plays in straight lines and uses his size and is physical and chips in a little bit offensively. Pelche, because of his lack of size, I'm not sure he projects to be a top six guy. The question is, can he be an effective bottom six guy for the Flames? And it's an everyday league. So a couple of good games is a good start, but it's going to have to be something that they do consistently to stay with the team. And if they don't, hey, we know there's plenty of guys waiting in the wings, whether it be Kuzmenko with the Flames or some other guys with the Wranglers.
Daily Flames Roundtable, Derek, Wes, Pat on this Friday. Next up for the Flames, couple of games through the Central Division on the road, and it starts Sunday night in Dallas. We don't get a ton of time to talk about other teams on the Roundtable, and I thought with a two-day lead-in on this Friday, it won't be completely dated by the time some people are listening. I thought today's a good day. First look at the Dallas Stars. Guys, where do the Stars rank for you or slot in for you? I don't need like a number, but like, you know, in terms of your tiers, where are they in terms of being a Stanley Cup contender?
I like them more with Chris Tanev than I do without him. I mean, I thought he was the one thing they were missing, you know, that defensive defenseman who is, if not the best penalty killing defenseman in the NHL, certainly one of them. They've got some offensive guys back there, but you know, I thought that was a brilliant move by Jim Neal to bring him in. It didn't work out for the Stars, I get it, but if he'd come back from his second season, I think that they would probably be in my top three legitimate Stanley Cup contenders. I still think they're a contender. I don't like them as much without him, but I still like them because when I look at their team, I really don't see any holes. They've got a really good 1-2 punch and goal. And when Jake Ottinger's right, as we saw back in the 22 Stanley Cup playoffs, he's right there with the best in the game. And they've got a good number two guy as well. Up front and on the back end, I think a team that can roll four lines and three pairings, a little less depth without Tyler Seguin, but I think they're going to get him back at some point. But I really don't see any holes on that Dallas Stars team. And for me, there really isn't a team in the league that's kind of jumped out and become the clear favorite to win the Stanley Cup to this point in the season. So I would include the Stars in a group of probably 8 to 10 teams that I think could win it as we approach the one-third mark.
Yeah, they're absolutely a contender. And because they've just put on a clinic at the draft in recent years, they're also pretty well loaded up to make some moves. You know, we saw it a year ago with Chris Tanev, but, you know, this is a team that's well positioned because of how deep their prospect pool is to add as the season goes on. And so, yeah, the Dallas Stars are certainly in that championship mix for me. I'll just, you know, throw one more thing out there, and I'm not gonna provide an explanation on this because I don't think I can defend it. I still think the Colorado Avalanche are the team to beat in the Central.
Really? Hey,
I know it's nuts, isn't
it? I don't
think
they're as deep though.
I don't think they're as deep, and I don't think their goaltending is as good, but they strike me sort of like the Oilers a year ago where everything goes wrong early and then they start to roll.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. I mean, they've got ridiculous talent, and I don't think they're going to be resting on their laurels. I also don't think Scott Wedgwood is the key to solving their goaltending problem. I digress. I think the Stars are cusping. Like I thought that they got over a big hump last year beating Vegas in round one, and I know they don't go as deep as they would have liked, but they did get over a little bit of a hump by beating the Golden Knights in round one. And I thought that was a really big step for them because that's a really good team. And they had some issues with them in the past. And so I thought that was important. But then they run into a buzzsaw Oilers team in the Western Conference Final after beating Colorado, who they've had some issues with at times too. Like, I just feel like they're about ready to get right over that hump. And I think they've got a very strong playoff goaltender in Jake Ottinger. And they've got an extremely deep group of forwards. And one of their guys isn't even necessarily at where we know he can be in Jason Robertson. I worry about what happens when Robertson really starts to feel it. And then I'm with you, Wilsey, on the Tanev front. But Jim Nill's not resting either. They're doing something. They're doing something significant between now and the trade deadline. And I know that their cap space is where it is. All that. I look at Dallas right now. If I were to say, who's my Western Conference team right now? on December 6th, I think I'd go the Dallas Stars. And I think that a lot of what we've seen from them has been good, but I still think there's more to see from them. And I think this team is built for the postseason, and they're going to be even more built for the postseason when we get there. So I would say among the Western Conference teams, even though I think I have a little more faith in a few of the Eastern Conference teams right now in terms of who I would put as my favorites to win the Stanley Cup, out of the West, I think it's Dallas.
And you know, it's funny. The Rangers would have been in that group of teams for me to start the season, and things have gone south for them, and they just traded their captain. I mean, so you just never know. And actually, Jacob Trouba would have been the type of player who I would have liked to see the Stars add. A guy who can play with that physicality, who's good defensively, hard to play against. I know he's regressed a little bit this season, but sounds like there was maybe some stuff going on behind closed doors there that we haven't heard the full story on. But I really like the Stars, and I do think they're built for the playoffs. They don't have the high-end talent. Certainly not that the Oilers have or that the Avalanche have. They don't have Connor McDavid or Leon Draisaitl. They don't have Nathan MacKinnon or Cale Makar, but I do think they have more depth, and I think there are different ways to win. Clearly, the Oilers beat the Stars in the Western Conference Final last year, and the Stars beat the Avalanche in the previous round. So you can win both ways, but you know, I just think that you're rolling the dice a little bit more when you're counting on a smaller group of players to get you through and to win games for you. When you've got a group that can roll four lines, or when I look at the Stars, man, is there a better top nine in the NHL than what Dallas has? I'm not sure that there is. And I don't love their fourth line, but I really do love their top nine. And I like them on defense. If they could add a 10 of tight between now and the deadline, I would love them on the back end. And Jake Oettinger has proven that he can be as good as anybody in the game. The Flames almost learned that the hard way back in 2022. So, yeah, the Stars are right up there for me, fellas.
Willsie, do you think Pat would say that you and I are cusping?
I cusped about 25 years ago.
I was going to say.
All downhill since then.
I think, you know what? The one thing I can say about this Daily Flames Roundtable, we are all post-Apex.
Post-cusp.
You know what? John Weisbrod would be very, very proud to say post-Apex.
Here, I'm going to put it in terms that Wes will appreciate. Wes, we're on the back nine.
Back nine, baby.
Yep. Bye, Willsie. Have a good weekend.
Okay, but bye, guys. Have a great weekend.
That'll start to wrap us up on the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. Wes Gilbertson, Pat Steinberg, Derek Wills on your Daily Flames Roundtable as we start to wrap things up this hour on a Friday. Thanks to Cam Hughes and thanks to Shan Virgie, our producers this hour. As we wrap it up, it's been the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. This Christmas, give the gift of security with smart locks and safes. Visit CalgaryLockandSafe.com.